Hello, this is Roberta Scott. Last November, I was fortunate enough to be the producer for our UFO Files programs that were taped at Sunset Station Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. This was the second annual crash retrieval conference staged by Ryan S. Wood, and there are always many interesting people for us to talk to there. But I wanted to introduce this segment because I found this man especially interesting. His name is Ted St. Rain, and he had some very interesting stories that I had never heard before. So I invite you to sit back and relax and listen to a very intriguing show as Jerry talks with Ted St. Rain.
Ted, before we do anything, I want to talk to you about the Federal Reserve. You know a lot about that. I wanted to get into that before we do anything else.
Well, let me just show you a little thing here.
Okay,
for the viewing audience.
Okay.
So you got $20 or a $100 bill I can borrow here?
Oh, the old $100 sting.
We'll use one of mine here. Yeah. So you notice on the you got a $100 bill here. No, it's got to be a $100. You know I don't have any $100.
You have a $100?
We'll use a $50. Okay. You got a pen, John? You notice on this
now,
bill,
John,
this $20 bill.
Right? Who's John?
Sure. John DeHaan.
Okay.
Deej Films. UFOlogix.com.
Yeah.
Notice on this $20 bill how you've got a couple different seals here. You know, if everybody gets out a $20 bill, on the left-hand side you have the Federal Reserve seal, and on the right-hand side you have the Treasury seal. And what's important to realize is in 1913, of course, the country went bankrupt, and we basically went and we created the Federal Reserve System. And up until that time, the Treasury is the one that basically had the authority to manufacture and print and coin money. What happened after that is that once we became bankrupt, the Federal Reserve got involved and basically signed that off. So if everybody looks at a $20 bill and you notice the Treasury seal on the right here, see how the word 20 has been written across that seal. And just like the stamp at a post office, that seal has been canceled on this bill. The only valid seal on this bill is this Federal Reserve seal. And so, in effect, if you just cancel out that bill,
okay,
it becomes worthless.
Wow, he tore it rough right in front of us.
So anyway, that's kind of the gist of the Federal Reserve. It's
not worth anything, then.
Well, it's worth the 3 cents that it was printed on and the this and that and another.
Seriously, I guess as long as people think it's okay, it'll last. But there seems to be a lot of attack on the dollar these days. And we're going to the euro. Is there any stuff like that that's important? I mean,
once again, the most important...
Or is the euro the same thing?
Well, the euro is... And, you know, some people say that the reason we went into Iraq in the first place was that Saddam was about to move all his money out of the dollar into the euro and his $6 billion in food money or whatever, and that basically...
We're going to end up going into a lot of countries if that happens, if that's the reason to go
in. Well, I mean, that's the philosophy, is that the euro is the new... it's basically helps devalue America, and what they've been trying to do for 20 years is probably sit down and kind of even everything out. You know, we've been the head honcho for so long, and yet the economies of the world have basically kind of taken a back seat to the United States. And so in order to have this free trade and NAFTA and GAAP and all this stuff, you basically have to even everybody out. And unfortunately, the United States has to come down, and there, you know, the third world companies have to go up, or so it says. One thing I do find very important that kind of interrelates to all this is peak oil. I don't know if you're familiar with peak oil or if you talked about peak oil on your show at all.
No, I haven't, so
yeah,
let's talk about it.
Sure, but in effect, peak oil refers to peak oil production, which is supposed to happen between 2008 and 2010. Keep in mind that peak oil in the United States, where we reach our maximum production, and it's like the top of a bell curve where you can't get any further. You can't do any more production. In effect, we reached peak oil here in 1972, and that's what caused the oil crisis, because then we started having to import all the, you know, most of our oil energy. There's a lot of people that say by the year 2010, the whole world will have reached peak oil, and we'll be at the top of the bell curve. We won't be able to produce any more oil. There'll be the law of diminishing returns. at the same time that China and India and these other large countries that haven't really industrialized yet.
Right, they're getting off their bicycles into cars.
They're going to start industrializing and getting online, mm-hmm. and they're going to need that oil too. And so there's other theories out there that that's the reason we were in Afghanistan, and the reason we're in Iraq is because Iraq has 12% of the reserves of the oil. And in addition, we're starting to destabilize Saudi Arabia. Even though Saudi Arabia and the royal family has been a very strong supporter of the Bush family and basically, you know, has been in bed with Bin Laden and the Bushes and all of that stuff, in effect, we're trying to destabilize Saudi Arabia so we can basically do another Iraq there. I mean, not so much on that, you know, that scale, but we basically want our hand on the tap so that when that peak oil production is reached, we'll be able to control at least 40% of the world's oil supply. Once again, in the end, basically phasing out oil, making as much money as they can on the oil, while they introduce these other technologies, so that when gasoline's selling for $20 a gallon, they'll come by and say, oh, but here we have hydrogen for $6 a gallon. Why don't you buy this instead? Or they'll sell you something. So there won't ever really be free energy. I don't know if any of your listeners have basically talked about any of that kind of stuff.
Sure, we have.
There's a lot of technologies out there that have been suppressed or bought up or people killed or, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's my hope that someday they will be released. Unfortunately, there may be a lot of wars and a lot of strife and a lot of things going on in the meantime. Until we reach a kind of an equilibrium, a sustainable, sustainable living, basically, on this planet. And this is all stuff they knew back in the 1950s. I don't know if you're familiar with the report from Iron Mountain, which is basically a think tank back in the 1950s, came up with scenarios for the future. And one of them, surprisingly, was basically a fake alien threat that they were going to manufacture in the years to come to basically gain control over it. Because what's happened is for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, religion has been a great control mechanism. I won't say mind control in a certain respect, but it's basically been a good way to basically keep people in line and follow the right way.
Well, now you got into the subject here. You've been making all of the tapes of the conference here, and you do this a lot. You've been to almost all of them.
Yeah, well, that's I'm very well read and very well. I get around a little bit at UFO conferences. I basically I have a videotape and production company called Lost Arts Media. www.lostartsmedia.com 1-800-952-5678. And basically,
I knew Ted to get the plug in. I love it.
I basically drive around the country, anywhere in the country where somebody will allow me to come tape. Like I drove back to the X-Con in April, and I've driven here. But basically, I'll go anywhere in the country at no charge to the producer, and I'll come in and produce videotapes and DVDs of the conferences.
And give that 800 number again so people can write it down.
Sure.
And the website, we have a link to on our website by this interview.
Yeah, and the website again is lostartsmedia.com, and the phone number is 1-800-952-LOST. That's 1-800-952-5678. And you can also email us lostartsmedia@yahoo.com. But getting back to the conferences, so just this month alone, I'm probably doing 80 tapes. On average, over the last 6 months, I've done one tape a year, one tape a day. So I've done 200 tapes in the last 6 months.
Okay, you've been sitting through all of these conferences, and you talked about this perhaps a fake ET menace.
Sure. Once again, that comes from the report from Iron Mountain from the 1950s.
All the way back to the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your take on it? Do you think, is there a menace or not?
I find that it's interesting. And another thing that the report from Iron Mountain talks about is a fake environmental disaster, and that they want to poison the environment on purpose so that it's problem, reaction, solution. They want to create a problem so that there's some kind of reaction and that they can provide a solution. And so that's another thing that the report from Iron Mountain talked about, was basically the creating environmental disaster. And, you know, they were just coming up with all this stuff that they could do to basically gain control. And like what I was telling you before, is religion worked for thousands of years. Then that stopped working as better as, you know,
sure,
as it would. And then, you know, then they had to throw the wars at us. So then, they, you know, we got the Chinese wars and the World War I's and II's and stuff. And but the war economies, you know, and we're in another war now. But they still need these other control mechanisms. And so much like Reagan talked about in that address to the United Nations, how, you know, what would it be like if, you know, if there was a threat from outer space, everybody on the Earth would band together to basically fight this alien threat. And
so in other words, that wasn't just an illustration. This is part of the plan.
Well, I would think it was part of the plan. I don't think there's anything, in fact, even this show here, I don't think there's anything that hasn't been planned out ahead of time. I mean, not that this show in particular, or even the Art Bell show, or any of these the,
sure,
the Goodman show that, you know, mm-hmm, basically preceded Art Bell.
You remember Billy Goodman?
Yeah. Billy Goodman happening.
I used to be on the same station with Billy, right in front of him.
Sure. Yeah. Night. And getting back to that, I mean, he's the Billy's the one that broke the Area 51 story.
Yes,
he
did.
He was on the air, and back in I think it was 89, he was telling everybody, hey, if you want to see a UFO, just drive out into Nevada,
and there you go.
And, you know, we were all in L.A., and we said, hey, what the hell, we'll go out there. So, you know. And
last time I heard from Billy Goodman, he was in Providence, Rhode Island. I don't know if he's still alive even.
Sure. But anyway, so...
Well, you make all these tapes,
uh-huh,
all the and people can go to the website and see how they do that.
Sure.
But basically, you've made some videos on your own, some DVDs. About
it's kind of a long story. I have a very short attention span. I wouldn't call it ADD, but I have a very short attention span, and so I'm easily bored, and which is why I kind of do what I do, and I travel a lot, and I try to keep myself entertained, like a change of scenery. So what's happened is that I cover all these different areas, and then I kind of get burned out on a lot of them, you know, CIA drug smuggling or, you know, whatever the usual stories are. Certain subjects, like peak oil, and this other subject we're going to be talking about here in a second, ancient mysteries in North America, I keep coming back to. It's like the anti-gravity and the free energy. There's certain subjects that hold my interest more than others. And so I spent the last 8 or 9 or 10 years, basically since I was in, junior high and high school, mm-hmm, I've been looking into these things. But basically studying the ancient mysteries of North America and, like, anomalous artifacts and... just weird, just strange, very unusual things. In fact, I have a book online for free that you could download. You can also buy a hard copy version for $13 and shipping on my website, www.lostartsmedia.com. Or you can download the free PDF version there. It's a 100-page book on all these ancient mysteries. Since we're here in Nevada, I'll just talk about a couple that are here locally. Down in the Grand Canyon, there's supposedly an underground city that was once there. It was still there. And what happened down there was that somebody was floating down the Colorado River in about 1905, I think it was, and they were looking for minerals. And he couldn't see it from the river, but he was camping and stuff, and so he got up on a ledge and he saw a large 12 by 14 foot hole in the side of the cliff, about 1,500 feet up the side of the cliff. And he decided to go investigate it, and it took him a while to get there. He had to come down from above and stuff, and he had his rifle and his lantern and whatever. And so he found this large tunnel that went into the side of the cliff at about a 15 degree angle down. And what was interesting about this is that there was a ledge right where this hole went into the side of the cliff, and from there was about 30 steps that went down. So what apparently was where the river had flown by before. But keep in mind, this is 1,500 feet up the side of the mountain, so this was quite some time ago that the river would have been that high. So he's trekking down into the cavern, and every so often there'd be a branch, and, you know, like it'd go into like a warrior's quarters or into a mess hall. Like the mess hall was 50 feet across by like 300 feet long and stuff. It's some sizable some sizable rooms. And he got further down, and he found like a mausoleum area that had basically had a lot of almost Egyptian sarcophagi type of arrangements that were like set up in a spoke wheel fashion around a center, like not really an altar. The altar actually comes in a minute. But anyways, there's like a mausoleum there that had these very unusual things. And as they got further down, there was like work areas. And what they did notice that all over the floor, there was slag, almost like a platinum slag. And slag is once again made from when you do metal smelting, you end up with a lot of excesses. And smelting is once again firing a metal to a certain temperature to burn off certain metals and try to regain other metals out of the mix. And so basically there's a lot of residue that's created from this process, and there was a lot of this residue all over the ground. What was very interesting is as they got down into the bottom of this this city, we'll call it, there was a large like altar area that had a Chinese-looking Buddha, actually, with two saguaro cactuses on either side, all carved out of this white marble that was, they didn't know where it came from. It was probably 150 miles away or something, where the closest marble like this came from. So anyway, this guy, this prospector, he was actually the first white man born in Utah. It was so long ago. And he gathered up some of the artifacts, and he used to work at the Smithsonian, actually. So he was floating down the river, and he got down to Yuma, and he had some of the artifacts shipped back to the Smithsonian to some friends that he has there. And they apparently had sent out a team to investigate, and it was billed as an Egyptian discovery in the Grand Canyon. And some estimates say that this could hold as many as 40 to 50,000 people.
Wow.
Was the size of this facility with probably 100 rooms. And that even further down, and there's legends among Native Americans in the area in this day, that there's a back entrance, that there's an air shaft that you can actually get into this facility. The front, apparently, after the Smithsonian got involved in, and if people go to my website and read my book, you'll hear that all about the Smithsonian covering up all sorts of interesting finds. But in effect, the nature of it is that the Indians say that there's a back entrance. It's like a 7-day hike from the North Rim. And this is supposed to be
inside, underneath.
Once again, on the ground, and then once you get to the air shaft, it's not that far. And I've also heard from friends of mine who are Native Americans that they've also found other burials in the area that are non-human, but the Native Americans aren't allowing anybody to know about it because they don't want people to go in and basically scavenge a site. But apparently there's some kind of hybrid things also in this area of the Grand Canyon. I'll just finish this story up. I didn't mean to spend this much time on it because there's other stories I want to talk about. But I'll finish it.
I want to hear both of them.
Sure. And I'll finish it up by saying that there's a legend amongst the Native Americans. I believe it was the Hopi in the area, whoever's in that area now up by Flagstaff. And basically there's a legend amongst them that they had once been underground dwellers. And there was a race of one-hearted people and two-hearted people, they called them. And two-hearted would be like good and evil, and the one-hearted would be only good. And that basically what happened, there was a war between these one-hearted and two-hearted people, and the one-hearted people, which were basically enslaved by the two-hearted people, had basically broken away and been freed from underground, from slavitude underground. And this is all right in that same area. Now into the next story, down in a little place called Maricopa, south of Phoenix, north of Tucson, out in the desert on the way to Mexico, there's a little ghost town now called Maricopa. And in the 1890s, they were digging a basement for a commercial building, and at about the 8-foot level, they came across a large clay sarcophagus again. And what they did is they called in some engineers and some workmen, and they cracked open this sarcophagus, and they found a granite mummy case inside. Once again, this is just south of Phoenix, about 50 miles south of Phoenix. And in any case, So they found this large clay sarcophagus, cracked it open. There was a red granite sarcophagus inside of it. They cracked that open. Apparently, the bones had been in the ground for so long that the bones had all turned to dust. They could see that there was some kind of mummy, like an Egyptian mummy, in there. And in effect, on the outside of the sarcophagus, there were some hieroglyphic depictions and a depiction of a being that had six toes. The other unusual thing about the sarcophagus is it held an individual that was about 12 feet tall. We'll just stay on the giant thing, so that finishes that one up. We'll stay on the giant thing. Once again, these are most of the common ones that maybe some of your viewers have heard about before. There's a lot more in my book that people should go check out.
Literally has been a land of the giants.
Land of the giants. There's another place north of Reno called Lovelock, Nevada. And in Lovelock, back once again about 1910 or so, there was some people mining bat guano in the caves above Lovelock, Nevada. And they kept coming across these large skeletons, 10, 12 feet tall. Most of them had red hair. And they let the universities of, you know, New York and Berkeley, mm-hmm. and all these, you know, scientific and archaeological universities know about it. But it was about a year before anybody sent somebody out, and only on an unofficial, quote-unquote, basically as unofficial observers, they were called. And even then, they were mostly interested in the part shards and in fact, in some cases, they instructed the workers to rebury, like, full skeletons. They didn't even want to look at them. Once again, 1910, so you could understand that this would be a problem, having a 12-foot human skull, you know, human being. And these skulls, once again, there's pictures on the website, www.lostartsmedia.com, of some of these skulls that are about, you know, twice the size of a human skull, 12-foot skeletons. So some of the workmen were so discouraged with the official response to all this that they basically did the best they could, gathering up some artifacts. And actually, before they even sent them out, in that year that had passed between the time they notified them and between the time they arrived, a lot of the artifacts had been destroyed because they were there to mine bat guano. They weren't there for an archaeological dig and stuff. So one of the head workmen took it upon himself to basically gather up whatever he could and make a makeshift museum in the city of Lovelock at the time, which actually operated for probably 10 years. But then, as usually the case in a lot of these things, a fire ran through the museum and basically destroyed a lot of the artifacts that were there. There's still, from what I understand, one of the skulls at the... I'm not sure. Once again, you have to go to the website. I think it might be at the Idaho Historical Society, but that might be another reference I'm thinking of. But it could also be in Reno. But apparently one of these skulls still exists.
I can tell we go to your website there. You can spend hours.
And actually I'm in the process of redesigning the website to have a database-driven situation, because right now it's really kind of thing. And I'm also doing various other websites that I should probably mention. One where I'm going to be posting 50, 100, 200,000 pages of primary source documentations, newspaper clippings, journal articles, research papers, things like that, on learningarchive.com. I've also got other domain names, upcomingconferences.com, remoteviewingtraining.net. I also do a lot of stuff. I do shoot a lot of videos on remote viewing, how to do remote viewing, how to do controlled remote viewing, those kind of things.
Now to order some of these tapes, all they have to do is just go to where again?
Yeah, go to my website, lostartsmedia.com, okay. Or call me 1-800-952-5678. The prices are all basically different prices on the website, but if you call me and tell me you heard me on the Jerry Pippin Show, I can give you the prices for $20 per disc or tape, postage paid. Some of them go up to $30, actually, so you could save $10
fantastic,
on some of them.
Fantastic. Appreciate that.
And once again, there at this point, there's 400 titles. That's about 1,600 products. There's video, DVD, audio tape, and audio CD, so there's four product lines for each title. Over 400 titles. There's also that upcomingconferences.com. I've basically listed all the conferences that I shoot, plus some that I don't, and I try to update it regularly so that people can stay informed about.
Time's almost up.
Sure.
But where are you going next?
Next weekend I'm shooting the Signs of Destiny conference
down in
Tempe, chetsnow.com.
Right.
The following weekend I'm shooting. It's Thanksgiving, and then the following weekend I'm shooting. The Adventures Unlimited World Explorers Club Conference in Sedona, Arizona, December 5th and 6th, 2004. Website for that is wexclub.com. And then on into next year, I'm also doing some Accelerating Change conferences coming soon.
So what, tell us in 30 seconds or so what an Accelerating Change
conference is. Sure. Well, basically, at this point, our technology doubles about every 18 months. Our processor speeds for computers are basically our technology is doubling every 18 months. Back in the Middle Ages, it happened about every 500 years. And so there's conferences forming and ongoing that basically talk about these changes that are happening technologically, spiritually, all this different stuff. And basically in the end, what happens if our technology doubles every 3 days? Then where do we face? What are we going to do? What do we do in 1,000 years? What's going to happen? And so find out more information about that, accelerating.org.
Ted, it's been a joy.
Sure.
And we look forward to catching you again.
Uh-huh. Sure.
I've enjoyed it. You got anything, closing comments?
No, I just want to say you didn't get my last name. My last name is, my first name is Ted, and then the last name is Saint Rain, STRAIN. Website, again, is lostartsmedia.com, 1-800-952-5678. And I want to thank you for your time here at the Crash Retrieval Conference. Thanks to Ryan Wood. And
great guy. Mm-hmm. Interesting the little speech you gave today.
And he'll be back here at the same hotel next year. UFOconference.com is his address. And, of course, we have my faithful assistant, John DeHaan, and his address, again, is UFOlogix.com. And I want to thank you for your time.
Fine. And then thanks very much, Ted. Mm-hmm. This is Jerry Pippin, and you're listening to the UFO Files.
Sure.